Welcome to Vegas Circle Podcast with your hosts, Pocky and Chris. We are people who are passionate about business, success, and culture. And this is our platform to showcase the people in our city who make it happen. On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing the process of business consulting. We're welcoming back the founder of PMK Consulting. We're welcome back, Mr. Cross.
Hey, Peter Cross, man. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to have you back, man.
Good to
it's
be
been
back.
It's been a year.
I feel honored, like second time.
Yeah, this is last awesome. One was a good one. Good to have you back.
This is one of our favorite people to talk to, man, just because the business mind of Peter, you know, has been a consultant for a while, been a business guy for a while, partnered with a lot of different people. We know a lot of the same people we've had on the podcast, which is great. You know, before we kind of talked about corporate culture and the business process and things like that. But what we want to first start off with is some of the factors why you choose a specific company to work with and what that kind of looks like.
Sure.
So can you kind of share with our audience, you know, what that kind of
No, I appreciate like? That. And it's a good question because candidly, I always say this, I'm as selective as my clients as I think my clients are of me or should be of a consultant in general. Yeah. That isn't always the case. I mean, let's face it, consulting is it's a tough gig and you're always out there looking for work and looking to make, you know, a fee or looking to make money. But I really look for fit, just as I used to do in my own businesses. I really look for fit. You know, my approach to consulting is a bit different. I really get in deep and we can talk about that more.
Yeah.
And that's not a fit for every business. Sometimes they want to keep a consultant more at arm's length. They don't really want you to get entrenched or behind the curtain, as I always say in their business. They kind of superficially, like I said, keep you at arm's length. So by way of discussion, kind of interviewing them as much as they're interviewing me, that's the first thing I look for in terms of fit. And then what problem are they really trying to solve? You know, that's all part of the assessment and sort of the qualifying process, I call it, of talking to a prospective customer. But for me, it's mostly fit.
Yeah.
I don't try to be everything to everybody. I think that's another mistake consultants make because they're chasing a fee or a payday, which I understand everybody's got to make a living. But it doesn't always net the best result or a result at all. And I also find it gives consulting sometimes a bad name. Again, my process is a bit different the way I approach that. But it's really about the fit.
And, you know, so then you're trying to like find a business. Are you geared more towards those businesses that are maybe floundering a little bit that need to kind of get back on track? Or is it more towards you kind of hit a plateau and I'm trying to elevate you to that next level? And when you're trying to identify that path, you know, how do you get in front of those people? Is it start just natural connections or is it you're literally cold calling, trying to find people that are having problems?
Yeah, thankfully I haven't cold called in a long time. I did certainly earlier in my career. I think we all did. We all have to, but I haven't made a cold call in a long time. I make warm calls. I get a lot of leads through networking and people that we know. I had a, you know, client potential call today. That was same thing. Actually, I met through a mutual friend of ours through Joey Hamilton. So shout out to Joey. Actually, he had this client in a tattoo chair and I went in there to say hi and we got to talking and he was like, what do you do? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you do? And a week later, we were on the phone, him and his partner talking about a potential consulting gig with them. So, I mean, to answer your question, it really comes down to really both. And it really depends on the need of the business. If you remember from our last discussion, I'm the level up guy. So next level is something I say a lot. I almost feel it becomes cliche a little bit. I say it so much, but I really, really sincerely mean it. Throughout my career, I've helped businesses that have already achieved a certain level of success. I'm consulting for two right now, but whether they've plateaued or I always say businesses outgrow people, businesses also sometimes outgrow their owners or their founders, right? Because people sort of skill out, you know, they take it as far as they can take it and they need help to get to that next level or frankly, even identify what that next level is because some people don't even see that or have that vision to figure out what the next level is. But I've also, to your point, also I've done, you know, turnaround jobs is how I would refer to it where, you know, you've really got a company that's on its, pardon me, on its ass and it really needs help. And it just, again, lacks the vision, the direction, there's missing skills or just team members and you got to put all that together. Ideas are great, but execution is everything.
You know, say me, I'm a person, I'm trying to develop my consulting business, or I'm somebody I think I may be a good fit for me to get into that industry. You know, when you were first starting out building your consultant in, business, were you trying to get those first clients, is it just really based off like, hey, I know this guy and he's really good at business? Or do you have to present yourself to be this pedigree to business person? You have to, you know, really show your accolades and why you've been able to achieve success. Or is it you go there and you just talk through problems and they feel confident in what you provide and then give you an opportunity to help showcase that?
Yeah, I think for most consultants starting out, if somebody's coming to me going, hey, I want to start a consulting business, what would you suggest I do? How do I promote or market myself? I think you have to, it's easy enough through social media, through the web, through YouTube videos, getting on platforms like this where you can get your ideas and your thoughts out. That's everything. For me, I took a little bit of a different path. I already had a proven track record. And maybe that's an important point without getting too off topic, and don't let me lose track of the question. Many consultants, and this is not intended as disrespect to the many consultants that are in the field, many of them are book smart, but I would say not street smart. And I have experienced, interacted with, and dealt with in my own businesses. I referenced this, sorry, Harvard again, I'm going to say it again, but I've referenced these sort of Harvard MBA career consultants who have never built a business, who have never had to make a payroll, who have never been in the trenches, who have never not taken a paycheck because they had to pay their people, who have never had a hire fire, right? Have never made those tough business decisions that business operators and entrepreneurs have to make. I have. And I think that gives me instant credibility with a lot of business people that I interact with because I've been there.
Not right? teaching the philosophy.
This isn't, you know, try this and let's see how it works. These are tried and true proven things that I've done throughout my own nearly 30-year career. Learned from a lot of other people too. Again, I said in my last discussion with you guys, I don't ever claim to be the smartest guy in the room. If I'm the smartest guy in the room, I think I'm in the wrong room. Okay. So I'm like, why am I here? And I'm surrounded by a bunch of dumb people, right? So that doesn't do me any good. And I don't approach a problem or a situation ever like I'm the smartest guy in the room, because you could always learn and pick up something from somebody. They're living it, they're experiencing it. But that real life practical hands-on experience, I think, is huge. We talked about in my last discussion, I'll take hard work and, you know, a background of work versus a degree. If you're going to make me make a choice, I take the work and the experience over the degree any day of the week.
Agreed.
The two guys that I was talking to today that are interested in potentially hiring me, you know, these guys barely made it through high school. And they're making millions of dollars a year.
That's interesting.
They're killing it. But again, they've hit this level now where they've gotten so big that their skills are only going to get them so much further. Right? Because now it's about the administration, it's about the operation, it's about all the moving parts of a very complicated business now. That's the experience they don't have. That's the experience I do. Right. So, you know, we always say teams are built by you play to their strengths and you cover for their weaknesses.
For sure.
So we all joke the first step to recovery is what? Admitting you have a problem. Right. Yeah. So the tough part for businesses is first admitting we've got a gap, we've got a deficit, we've got a problem. We can't solve that problem. Who's going to solve it? Yeah. So either you hire somebody full time to come in and solve it for you, or you bring in an outside third party consultant like myself. And the benefit of that, too, is you bring somebody in with a different perspective, right? I come into the business, I don't have a horse in the race. I don't have a different agenda. There's no ego involved. I'm not trying to prove anything really to anybody. I'm just here to do a job. I'm here to identify those gaps, see if they are indeed gaps, or do you just perceive them to be gaps? And then we get to work on solving the problem, right? So it's really different. But for the most consultants coming out of the box, it really depends. Are you coming from a background of proven business experience and success? Or did you just graduate school and you've got all these ideas and philosophies and you're like, man, being a business consultant would be cool. I make my own hours. I do this. I do that.
It's tough work.
It's tough. It's tough work and it's a tough grind. And then what are you really bringing to the table? But there is a vast majority, a very high percentage of career consultants out there that, again, never built a business, never were in the trenches, never suffered a loss, you know, within the business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's invaluable.
And do you like go like, do you go top down through the business? Like, are you reviewing your financial reports, the policies, procedures, et cetera, like relationship workflows, processes, SOPs, everything, and really just reevaluate the whole business and kind of implement new structures? Like,
I mean, ideally, that depends on the level of engagement. Sometimes they bring me in just to focus on a specific area of the business where they would rather keep me sort of behind the curtain or in front of the curtain, not behind it. So I don't don't get to see financials and maybe some of the other data. Most of my engagements, because it's the fit that I look for, back to my earlier comment, is exactly as you described. It's top down, bottom up. It's the whole thing. The engagement I'm doing for a mutual friend, a whole full access, top down, looking at the financials.
Sounds exciting.
No, it's great. And it's, and again, I bring a completely different, I'm looking at it through a completely different lens, a completely different focus. Again, I don't bring any bias. I don't bring any, I just bring experience. I bring knowledge. And I'm like, this doesn't look right. Oh, it looks right to me. Well, no, but that's not right. Let's look into that. And sure enough, it's not right. It's right because that's what they've been looking at for 3 years. It isn't right because it's actually
blind.
Right.
Yeah, you get blindsided a lot of times.
What's the whole you can't see the forest for the trees thing, right? When you're living it every day, and it's like the guys that I was talking to earlier today, these guys, one of my favorite expressions, they're running and gunning every day.
Yeah.
You know, they're so in the business. They're so in the weeds that they're tactical, not strategic. At some point, especially as a business grows and it scales, and now you're dealing with 1,000+ people, millions and millions of dollars in revenue, right? There's a lot of moving parts to a business of that size and complexity.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that earlier in the process you didn't think about. So you're so focused on get it, survive the day, survive the day, survive the day. One of my favorite things that I say is you either run your business or your business runs you. Mm-hmm. You choose every day.
That's true.
And most business operators choose wrong.
Yeah.
And they let their business run them.
When did you know you were good? Because we know you're good. And we know a lot of people that know you. Like, for example, shout out to Blake Wynn. That's how we met, right?
Balake.
What'd you say?
Balake.
That's hilarious. Balake.
I still call him that to this day.
Blake is great, but that's what he said. He said, look, Peter is one of the great minds, man. You got to meet him. And but when did you know, like, out of all these companies that you've built out, like, when did you know, like, I can do and have my own consulting company?
Yeah.
Like, let's put it to paper. Let's put the business plan together. This is what I can do. Like, when did that happen?
It, you know, I think it was cumulative over the course of my career. I was always, you know, the youngest manager of this and the youngest of that. So I was definitely an early developer, right?
Okay.
In terms of, you know, where I was at my stage in the career compared to my peers. You know, rookie of the year, salesman of the year. First of all, I'm an overachiever, guilty as charged.
Yeah.
I'm competitive as hell. So, you know, whatever environment I went into, if I couldn't be the best, why bother? I don't enter the race unless I'm intending to win the race.
Yeah.
There are some people that are completely happy with second, third, fourth, fifth place. That was never me. Mm-hmm. It'll never be me. And by the way, I don't like to surround myself with people who have that mentality.
Yeah.
Second place is first loser. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. That's the way I've always looked at it. So really by way of feedback from mentors, peers, bosses throughout my career, they're like, dude, you're different. Like, you're wired different. You think you approach this problem differently. You're thinking about this differently. To me, it's just what came naturally, right? It was the way I approached the situation. It was the way I approached a problem. And then just over the course of the career, it yielded results, right? You know, I don't have a fancy, you know, Harvard degree, you know, I learned a lot of what I learned through hard work and through great mentors and coaches and leaders of my own. Yes, I have an education, but I'm just saying, you know, there are people that come out feeling really good about themselves, about that, again, that piece of paper, like we discussed in the last discussion. And, but what are you doing with it? Right. And how do you really apply that? And I think it's just a different mentality, different thought process. So throughout my career, you know, you get the accolades, you get your feedback that reinforces, oh, okay, I'm doing something right.
Let's be,
you know, this is working, but it's very result oriented and result driven. You know, the first thing I've always said, and I try to instill this in my own kids too, is I don't believe in the word can't. That word was not allowed in my house.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear you can't. I want to hear how you can,
yeah,
because maybe the path needs to be different, whatever. I was on a business call earlier, and all I kept hearing from this particular person was all the reasons they couldn't do something or achieve something. Yeah. I said, okay, I've heard 20 minutes of why you can't. How about we start talking about how we can?
Yeah.
And I know it sounds corny to some people, but it's really, that mind shift is really important. It's really important.
And you don't back down. That's probably the difference. You probably don't take no as an answer. No, so that's what it is. Yeah.
No, there's no quit. There's no quit. And I think I said it in our last discussion, I'm unapologetic about my approach to things. And it's not because I always think I'm right. That's not the point. Some people take that. I also love to say the difference between arrogance and confidence is the ability to pull it off.
Yeah.
You know, so there's nothing wrong with being confident as long as you can back that up, right? If you're just all talk and can't back it up, that's arrogant.
It's a different.
There's a big difference. A big, big difference.
Yeah.
And that confidence has gotten me far. It's got me in trouble a time or two. But I've worked my way out of that trouble. Sometimes you write checks your body can't cash, you know, when you're saying things a little early in the process, right? But I've always figured out a way. So those lessons I also carry forward into my consulting practice, right? Mm-hmm. Something I say to all my clients is my job is to help you short circuit the process, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, you could go this alone. You could figure it out. It might take you 2 years, mm-hmm. but what if I can get you there in 6 months?
Changes the game, man. Yeah.
Time is money.
What do you see what's happening in Vegas, right? So we're...
The Vegas Circle podcast is brought to you by RAC Financial. They help new and established businesses with simple, secure, and reliable payment processing. RAC's credit card merchant processing services are unmatched. Visit racfinancial.com today and mention Vegas Circle podcast.
Everything's global now, right? You've been traveling everywhere. Crazy. Like we were talking about, you're going to Germany. Europe, what do you see happening in Vegas, right? Like Chris and I, we love Vegas.
Yep.
Business, everything that's happening here, and we're only getting better.
Yep.
Somebody wants to come to Vegas and build their business, small business or whatever it is. What do you say to them, right? Because it's so global now. The landscape is changing all the time. We got ChatGPT. We got all these different things that are changing jobs. I'm curious what your perspective is on that.
I have friends that call me the unofficial mayor of Las Vegas because I'm a huge fan of the city too. I love it. I think it offers a tremendous amount of opportunity.
Yes.
Born and raised in New York, amazing city. Once you're a New Yorker, you're always a New Yorker.
I love New York. Yeah.
No. And I think it stays in our blood and our DNA, and it gives us a drive and an energy that not every place has, right? So I don't want to disparage anybody else, but I love that I'm from New York. Okay. I don't want to live there ever again. I really don't, but I love the energy and some of the lessons it taught me, right?
And the hustle, man.
And the hustle. That's what I mean. You got to outwork and out, like and out hustle everybody else around you for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I've lived in New York, I've lived in California, I've lived in Tennessee, I've lived in Florida, I've lived in North Carolina. I've been all over this great country. And there's nothing like Las Vegas. Not just for the obvious reasons.
No, I agree with you.
But the ability to network and connect in this town is like no other. I mean, we were joking before we started talking officially that, you know, it's a small town. I think Reno is called the biggest, smallest, whatever it is.
Yeah, the largest small city in the
Vegas
world.
Vegas is the biggest small town in the world.
100%.
It really is. I mean, it's got a sizable population now compared to where it was X number of years ago. It's a very dynamic city. There's a ton of money here. Ton of capital, ton of
very
money,
much so.
Individual wealth as well as corporate wealth here. Some people don't realize how much that really is or how big that really is. And it's a can-do city. You know, it says it wants to do something. 9 times out of 10, it gets it done.
Yeah.
The stadium is a perfect example. T-Mobile Arena. I mean, people forget. I mean, shout out to our Golden Knights who just won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, for sure, Yeah.
But people forget that T-Mobile Arena was built in partnership with the team and MGM Resorts before we had a team.
Good point.
We didn't have enough team.
Yeah. Just like they're trying to build that $10 billion NBA stadium.
Which is not
stadium.
They are.
I know the guy that's the president of that,
and that's not happening. That's happening.
And they have no team, but they're doing it ahead of time.
But this is future.
Same concept. Build it and they will come, right? So they're trying to show the NBA, just like we showed the NHL, we're serious. We're serious about being a hockey town. I mean, we went to the Stanley Cup Finals the very first year. You know, just fell short, which, you know, sucked, but maybe it was for the better. You know, it's that much sweeter now in our sixth year. And the owner called it. He said, Stanley Cup in six, and here we are.
That's awesome.
But imagine that. Here's a city that had the balls,
okay,
to build an entire arena without an expansion team, without a promise of a team, without a commitment of a team. We knew we were on the short list. I think that's about as much as we knew at the time, but that was it.
That's a strong statement to put that much money up. Huge. That's huge.
I mean, kudos to the city. Kudos to MGM. Kudos to Bill Foley. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's huge, but that's the can-do attitude of the city. It's why we attracted the Raiders, you know, when Oakland fumbled the ball, pun intended, on that one big time. And it's about to happen again with the A's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's
gonna be really
that just got passed in the law. So although the city council wasn't too keen on it for a variety of reasons, that stadium's happening. We're going to have a baseball team.
Yeah.
And we will have an NBA team.
I'm excited for it. Hopefully LeBron owns that NBA team too.
That's what he's really excited. He wants to be the owner, but he will be part owner.
Kind of to take a step back with the consulting. I know, you know, say you talked a bit ago about when you have to have those hard conversations. You know, say you are consulting somebody on a business and you realize, look, maybe they are being aggressive to some of the feedback that they need to adjust. And maybe you realize the way they're taking it isn't going to work. Are you open to having that conversation? Like, you're just not cut out for this, or you don't have the ability to grow. Or maybe you start looking at an exit strategy for you to get out of this position.
Yeah, I'm not afraid. I call those hard, you know, tough conversations. Yeah. That's what they are. And I'm not afraid of them. That's the job. You have to have a confidence of as a consultant to go in there and have those difficult conversations and know that it also might cost you the gig.
Yeah.
Because the guy you're probably criticizing is the guy paying your check, right?
Yeah,
ego gets in the way. Yes. But I've never shied away from that.
Yeah.
I've in every engagement I've ever had, big or small, there's been at least one or two tough conversations where you surprise the ownership mm-hmm. with some feedback they weren't ready to hear. is the nicest way I can put it. But that tells me a lot about the ownership and their willingness to change. Because mm-hmm. people can talk about change all they want. And people do. We do as people in our personal lives. We talk about change in our professional lives. I'm going to start working out this year. I'm serious this time, right? And we don't do it. It happens both professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. If that person's not willing to receive that constructive criticism, which it is, and if they're not willing to make the necessary changes, that tells me everything I need to know about them as a client.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a short engagement. You know,
that's interesting. That's a tough guy. I feel like a really tough place to be in.
It is. No, it really is. And people don't understand or probably fully appreciate that. So it is. It is a tough gig to be in and a tough position to be in. But that's the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
I'm curious just for your perspective, because we talk a lot about work-life balance, right? Yeah. You hear that all the time.
What is that?
I figured you were going to say that. Yeah. Like,
no, I've gotten better at it.
How do you balance that, right? Because you're involved in so much, right? Traveling, doing the whole thing, wife, kids, the whole nine. How do you keep a work-life balance? So what is your kind of, you know, process?
Early in my career, I was terrible at it. I mean, but I was traveling 2 weeks out of every four. I was all over the world. I was doing all kinds of things, right? So I don't know how you define that as a life-work balance, right? You know, if you're in a relationship, your partner's sacrificing you away. It's a lot of time apart. Yeah. If you have little kids, that makes it even that much harder. I don't believe in one definition of life-work balance. It's what works for the individual person. It's what works for the individual couple. Yeah. You know, we've all heard this and I've made my mistakes, but I finally got it right this time, I think. I believe so. But the partner you choose in your life is the best and most important decision you make. Because if they don't counterbalance that, if you can't work together as a team, you know, and because, you know, we all assume it's me that's traveling. Well, what if she's traveling or what if she's got things do and she's got other stuff to take care of? You got to be able to handle everything on the home front as well as on the professional front. So I think having the right partner in your life, or by the way, no partner, you just handle your stuff. I mean, whatever works for the individual. But I think finding that's the balance that's important is that relationship balance is what translates to the life work balance.
Yeah.
Because there's been a bazillion memes and you can find 100 videos on this. There is no 50-50.
It's 100-100.
Exactly. Yeah, 50-50 does not exist. That's a BS notion.
Yeah.
So,
I wish I heard that at a younger age.
You and me both. Balance this out. There is none. Everybody's got to give 100%. And then even within that, right, it depends on the needs of the relationship and the needs of the person. And that's both personal and professional. Again, you cover for people's weaknesses and you cover for their strengths. In a relationship, we all bring something to the table, good and bad. Right. And we got to cover for that and we got to resolve for that. So I'm at a point now where, and we talked about this in our last discussion, you know, a certain amount of, you know, business success or financial success affords you a certain amount of freedom and flexibility. Mm-hmm. Time is the most valuable commodity, right? Everybody's heard that.
Yeah.
That's what money gets you. Is time and flexibility. It's not about stuff. It's not about the car. It's not about the houses. It gets you time. If I want to wake up at 10, I wake up at 10. If I need to wake up at 5, I wake up at 5. Early in my career, I had to wake up when I had to wake up and I had to do what I had to do. It's nice when you get to a point, as we discussed, you know, when you do what you want to do instead of what you have to do.
Yeah.
But that's not an easy road and it takes some people longer than others. And some people never get there.
Yeah.
Some people never get there. But you know, in my consulting practice, I do talk about that because I do, you know, executive leadership counseling, speaking of marriage counseling, I do that for executives too. Because one of the issues too is you have, you know, a company's grown and you get dysfunction and other things that develop within an organization and, you know, the executives aren't getting along anymore. So you have a CEO who's the leader who goes, look, I want all my people to collaborate and to get along and to work well together. And all right, they don't have to be BFFs, right? They don't have to.
The synergy gets all messed up.
But the chemistry's got to be right. Again, that culture's got to be right. So sometimes I'll go in and there are other people that specialize in this field and help them sort of analyze, okay, what's the issue? Where's the breakdown in communication? How do we get you guys back on the same page, at least in the same book?
Yeah.
Right? those lead to some really tough conversations.
I bet.
They're really tough conversations.
So they're hitting home personally.
Well, because it's inevitably it's one or two people that are the cause or the root of the problem.
And it has so much stress.
And there's that toxicity. Yeah. And there's, you know, we all talk about the cancer that can develop within an organization. You know, part of my job is I'm rooting out those cancers. I'm rooting out those toxic traits. Mm-hmm. Because, again, sometimes business leaders and owners are too close to it and they can't see it. And frankly, sometimes they're the problem. Right. And it's very hard for someone to admit, you know, am I the drama? Like that me, right? You know,
because your ego,
because your ego gets in the way. Plus I'm the boss, so it's my way or the highway, right? That's the boss mentality versus the leadership mentality. So I give honest feedback and a lot of pushback on that for sure. That's not easy. But I think life work balance means different things to different people. I don't think there's any one size fits all definition of that. Yeah. I always tell people find what works for you. I think we're all fans to some extent of Gary Vee, right?
So, yeah, I love Gary.
Okay, so Gary just talked about this recently too, and he's like, I got friends that make $47,000 a year and they're the happiest people on the planet. I got friends making millions of dollars a year and the most miserable people I know.
I agree. Yeah.
So
pick what you want to do.
What makes you happy? What are you really passionate about? You know, that $47,000 a year person's going on vacation once a year. Yeah, they save up for it, but they're going on vacation once a year. Yeah. I know people making $1 million+ a year haven't taken a vacation in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they can't find the time. Or they're too anxious to break away from their business. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, and I work on this in my practice as well, that means because you don't have the right infrastructure, you don't have the right support system. Mm-hmm. There's a client I'm working with right now, you know, works 18-hour days, 6 days a week. Is afraid to push away, take any time away from their business because they're afraid that the rest of their team is going to make bad decisions, wrong decisions, and take the company potentially just day to day, week to week down a path he's not going to be happy with, right? So he hasn't been able to delegate, hasn't been able to assign those responsibilities to other people. Everything has to come to him. Every decision has to come through his desk. You can't scale, build, or grow a business that way. And plus, talk about life work balance, there is none.
Yeah, that sounds.
It's all.
He's an employee.
He's an employee to his own company.
Yeah,
one of the best.
It's like that cash flow quadrant. Remember Robert Kiyosaki talked about that all the time.
One of the best things is that it's a joke, but it's very very true. Is that I didn't want to work 9 to 5, so I quit, started my own business. Now I work 24/7.
You tell the truth,
but it's true.
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
It's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, because you have to be able to create a business, because a business essentially runs itself, right? Whether you're there or not, and you're kind of helping it guide it down a specific path.
If the systems are there.
You're building a system.
Yeah, you're a system guy.
One of the proudest, best moments you can get to as a business owner, builder, entrepreneur, whatever, a CEO, is when that organization genuinely becomes this sort of self, you know, its own living organism, if you will. It lives and it breathes and it operates. And if you step away to go on vacation with your family for 2 weeks, guess what? You come back, it's still there. Awesome. You know, it didn't burn down. Nobody died.
Got all the right pieces in place.
It's an amazing feeling. And when you can delegate to people who, you know, this sounds really egotistical, but in two of my businesses in particular, my executive team would always say, what would Peter do? You know, and you know, versus the other. They would say, and that's why I don't want it to come across egotistical, but they would say, what would Peter do? And that was sort of their driving force around decision making. And I'm like, okay, that's great, but I also want you guys to develop your own critical path thinking. I need you guys to not just think, what would I do?
What's your flavor? Yeah,
because come with their own flavor. I don't need 12 Peter robots in the business. Mm-hmm. I need individuals with their own thoughts, their own ideas, because I need you to challenge mine. Mm-hmm. Because what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You know, I don't want to find out I'm wrong far down the road if you can help me identify that that's a bad idea or a half-baked idea or at least not a fully developed idea, right? So, you know, you hear in business all the time, you don't want to be surrounded by yes people. Mm-hmm. That inevitably is what happens in organizations because people are afraid for their job. They're afraid to upset the boss. So you get a bunch of bobbleheads in the business, right, that are just doing this all the time at you. And that's the worst thing for a leader. And the worst thing for a business. But it happens all the time.
I know we asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you a different way.
Yeah.
For business advice.
Trying
right?
to answer it differently.
Yeah. So what I'm curious, right? Yeah. We've had multiple different people talk about business advice, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's better to have maybe a side hustle or to maybe be a small business owner and still work your job?
Yeah. I have mixed feelings on this. So if you listen to Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I'm a huge fan of.
Okay.
And not that they need my plug, but his documentary on Netflix is
I just saw it. I haven't watched it, but I saw the trailer for it.
Even my wife was like, I don't want to watch this. And she was like, like at TV, good. Like riveted. Okay. No, it's really, really good.
Okay.
I'm a huge fan of his, not acting wise, just his whole life trajectory, everything that he's done, his drive, workhorse, his ambition. Too, man. He's a beast.
Yeah.
He's a beast. But he believes there is no plan B. So if you listen to any of his talks, he will tell you repeatedly, do not have a plan B, because if you have a plan B, you're not fully focused on plan A. Right. So, and I believe there's some truth to that. Now, that's simple in its simplest form. We all realize that people have responsibilities. They got bills to pay. They're afraid or unable to make that leap.
Yeah.
Right. So it starts as a side hustle. Gary Vee even talks about this. Yeah, right? It starts as a side hustle.
He loves a side hustle.
He loves it.
Yeah.
It starts at it, but you got to work at it. Like anything else, if you don't work at it, if you don't give it its time and attention, part-time results come from part-time effort.
Right? You got to be all in.
So that's the tug of war and the give and take, and why I struggle with these side hustles, because you're only going to get out of it what you put into it. So if you're busy working your 9-to-5 job and you only have a couple hours of work a week to put in your side hustle, at what point is that side hustle going to be big enough or lucrative enough for you to quit your 9-to-5? It may never happen, right? Because you're only putting in a couple hours a week, yet you're putting in 40 hours a week into the thing that you're paying your bills So the people who are usually successful with their side hustle are putting in as many hours or more on their side hustle as in their main job. And that's hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, with families and obligations and responsibilities and kids at home and all those kinds of things. But those are the ones that I find to be the most successful, or they kind of just stay side hustles, which is fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like supplemental income.
Exactly. And maybe that's all you needed. And that's maybe all you really wanted.
Yeah.
But if you really want it to become something, if you want it to become this living organism of a business that sustains you and hopefully many other people, it's hard.
It's literally that 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. literally every day.
Yeah.
Or you're going to make it happen.
It's that grind. And that's you know, everybody talks about, oh, it was an overnight success. You mean you were a 14-year overnight success?
No.
Right? How many years and hours and months of grinding was that to get to that point? But nobody sees that. Right? We've all seen the memes and the analogies of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Right? You see this much, but the iceberg is this big below it. Sorry for those listening, you can't see my hand motions. But, you know, there's way more happens below the surface, right, than, you know, and that's the same thing with business and with success.
Yeah.
So
I love hearing your mindset on that, so I just want to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, but, I don't want to crap on anyone's side hustle.
No,
because
I get it.
There is value and there is benefit, but I think people have, you know, if I just work at this side hustle 3 hours a week for the next 2 years, it's going to be it's not
time,
especially once you start getting into it and you realize the more you involve you get into it, the more time you're going to have to put in, and people usually hit that benchmark there, so it's almost like they slow quit. Play it don't have to have that level of involvement a lot of times, but you do have to commit to it. Like that's the hardest part is the, like you said, at least a few hours a day if you're going to start at a side hustle.
It's every day.
Yeah, and that's I tell people all the time, and I get asked the question a lot in different ways, and I'm like, if you're not going to put the time and energy into it, why should you expect, you know, the results you're looking for?
Yeah.
You know, all of our, especially now, kids are taught, dream big. Okay. But if you're not willing to put the work behind the dream big, the dream isn't just going to magically happen.
Yeah.
I don't know any dream fairy floating around just granting wishes.
That's true.
Right. It's all about the work and it's all about the effort. Right. And again, as I said earlier,
it's like me talking to my kids, man. My kids out about that. Yeah. For real.
It's the execution. Yeah. It's the hard work.
There's this weird confidence now that I'm seeing with a lot of the younger generations where they're like, I'm going to do this, but
confidence?
They're not doing any work. That's not how it happens.
No. It's because of the social media. You see and get, all the cool stuff.
Well, it's the instant gratification.
Yes,
you know, if I do this, I should be the president of that in 2 weeks.
No, instantly.
As long as I wish it into existence, it'll happen.
I'm going to manifest it.
Yeah. I know we asked you this before, and I know Joe's Crab is your favorite restaurant. Give us another gem. What's your another great restaurant you go to?
Milos.
So,
Greek Mediterranean restaurant.
It used to be at Cosmo before, right?
Used to be at the Cosmo. Now it's at the Venetian Palazzo.
Okay.
Fantastic food. They have one in New York. They have one here. Hmm. If you've ever been to Greece or Santorini in particular, that's it.
Okay.
It's like you're in Greece.
Awesome. Right. I've been to Milos. I went to the one at Cosmo, not the one at Venetian.
Yeah, this is fast food Greek food.
No, it's good.
This is good fresh fish.
Yeah.
Vegetables. The stuff is amazing.
Almost the catch of the day type of stuff.
Yeah. Well, they literally have their fish market. You walk up, you pick your actual fish, you do all that kind of stuff. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
going
else
there next week.
Are you okay? Good stuff. You're always eating a good restaurant.
I try.
What else are you focused on for this year and coming up?
Yeah, I've got a couple of new projects that I'm working on. I feel like last discussion I said the same thing. I can't disclose a couple of them.
There's a couple
things that are cooking.
I'm going to see if you can hiccup.
No, didn't trip me up. But no, I'm excited about it. You never know what's going to come in the consulting thing. That's both the exciting and the hard part about it.
Yeah.
You know, you do a 3-4 month engagement and that could be it, or it can continue. Yeah. You don't know how many more are going to come at you. Balancing that is also really critical. You know, there was a chance, I don't know if we talked about this in our last discussion, I can't recall, but there was a chance I was going to maybe have to leave Vegas for a little bit to pursue a certain business opportunity. I chose not to pursue that business opportunity because it was going to require me to leave Vegas.
Yeah. We don't want you to leave Vegas.
No, I heard that from a lot of people, which was nice. But I appreciate you bringing it up. I'm really committed to the city and the growth and everything that's happened here. I want to, you know, as a business person, there's an opportunity for everybody to tap into that, energy and the growth that we're experiencing in the city.
Yeah.
So that I don't even know what that fully means yet. Like, how do we tap into that? Yeah. A lot of positive momentum. We're going to experience some challenges for the rest of this year and into next year in terms of economy.
Yeah.
Down economies, people forget, present as many challenges as up economies do. Mm-hmm. You just have to be, you know, paying attention to those opportunities.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some restrictions and some challenges for sure in a variety of different industries, businesses, real estate being one of them.
Yeah.
Interest rates are not helping right now.
No, definitely not.
You know, I was even talking to a company earlier today too, another one, and they're in the solar installation business. Mm. And solar's booming right now and it's doing quite well in the Western region. It's doing quite well here in Nevada in particular. Not everybody might be familiar with the history, but solar left Nevada for a little bit because there was some issue with the power company and some other stuff going on.
And I remember that. Yeah.
So it didn't pencil out for a homeowner. It didn't make any sense. Well, now they're back and they're back in a big way. 90% of those installations of solar panels are financed. Well, that was cheap a year ago. Now with interest rates being what they are, it's not so cheap. So this was a challenge that industry didn't anticipate. Where now all of a sudden, where it was easy to pencil out, you're going to save this much money a month by going to solar. Not so much anymore.
So
the math over time still works, but it's different math now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to react to that and you have to respond to that and you have to be able to still show the value add. By the way, not that this is a commercial for solar. I believe in solar. I think especially here in Southern Nevada where we have 300 so whatever days of sun. Why would you not tap into the power of the sun?
That's true.
Yep. And especially anybody who lives here in Southern Nevada, you know, you get that first summer power bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big mind of the deal.
Yeah, you're like, sure. Yeah,
we're not even really hot yet. We're not even hot yet.
We haven't even had 100 yet. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't the first day of summer like coming up in like a week?
Yeah.
It's not even summer
yet. We haven't even cracked 100 yet.
But it's been nice. I'll take it. I'll take it.
It was gorgeous. But no, I think a lot of exciting things going on. Like we were talking about earlier, baseball coming, you know, NBA. I don't think it's a question. It's just a matter of when. Mm-hmm. They're going to make the investment. They're going to do it, which is really, really cool. Just focused on time with the family, doing some stuff.
Yeah.
Summer's here. We got, you know, some stuff we're going to do.
Yeah. Peter's the man.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to tell you. I love talking with him, man. So it's absolute pleasure to have you back on, man, and be able to share some of your mind, man. We keep rooting for you, man. We're gonna have you run for governor at one point, man. We're gonna put that in and get you politics.
Put it in existence.
So but no, we appreciate you, man. Seriously, check us out at thevegasrecord.com.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great stuff. Great.